Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy, and as always, so thankful that you have been able to join us as we continue in our study of the Old Testament as we're going through it this year and find ourselves this morning in Psalm 52 through 54. And so hope that you'll be able to join us in a study of those three psalms even this morning. Certainly covet your prayers this week as, Lord willing, we are away at Camp Ida, enjoying a wonderful week there, helping the kids as they study the Bible and have a good time together, and also enjoy that fellowship that even we as the adults enjoy out there. And so can't be with you live in the studio this morning, but glad we have an opportunity, even in this avenue, to sit down together and to study these psalms. As we continue through, as even I mentioned last time we were together on air, there is a continual reminder through many of the things that the psalmist is saying, and we continually talk about the trust and the confidence that the psalmist places in God, and that certainly does not change as we go even through these three psalms this morning, as we will be able to see. And so I invite your attention to Psalm 52 as we begin our studies this morning. Here the psalmist would write, "Why boasteth thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness. Thou lovest all devouring words. O that deceitful tongue! God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away, and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place, and root thee out of the land of the living. The righteous also shall see and fear, and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that hath made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and strengthened himself in his wickedness. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God for ever and ever. I will praise thee for ever, because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints." If we were to look at the chapter heading here that goes along with this psalm, likely you may have a note there that this is attributed as a song of David. That it was on the occasion when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul and said unto him that Saul had come unto the house of Ahimelech. And I would refer you back there to 1 Samuel chapter 21 and 22 as David is fleeing from Saul, and he goes there to the priest's home, and not knowing what David is up to, the priest has helped him, and Saul will come and, because of the report of Doeg, will slay Ahimelech and 85 priests on that occasion. And it is possible here that this is the context at which we come into Psalm 52 and see this great lament. Within the lament, I see two things that stand out. And primarily, first and foremost, it's an idea of contrast. There's a contrast between the righteous and the wicked. There's a contrast between the one who places his strength in God and the one who fails to place his strength in God. David is going to make a lament and a charge against those who have done wickedly, and yet there is a comfort within him that says, "But I trust in God. He is my strength. He will not fail me, even as I know that others are going to be failing because they have trusted in themselves, and they have trusted in wickedness, and they have trusted in the things of this life." And so there is contrast, but I also see a resolve that even in the midst of all of the troubles that have gone on around him, even in the midst of evil and wicked men that have set themselves against him, still David's confidence is that I will trust in God. Even as things don't go as I want them to, Even as it seems sometimes wicked might triumph, nevertheless, I know who is in control. And so he would be able to continue trusting in God. So first we see this description, if you will, in verse 1 through 4. This is the enemy. This is the wicked man. He addresses him as a mighty man, the one who has shown his strength, has put forth this show, if you will, not displayed true and honest strength, but the one who considers himself mighty, the one who considers himself to have all of this strength. This is the enemy that is before him. He has taken confidence in himself, not in God. And so here he is addressed as this mighty man, but he's also addressed as this one of a deceitful tongue. This tyrant who will boast of mischief against the godly. This one who has a tongue that is like a sharp razor that cuts and destroys and tears down. This one who is a worker of treachery. This one who loves evil more than he loves good. This one who loves lying more than he loves speaking the truth. This one who loves words that devour. Here is one that is set before us, that indeed is this wicked man who has not placed his confidence in his strength in God. Rather, he is trusting in himself. And particularly here, we see the one who is boasting of great things, even with his tongue, with his mouth, one who is speaking deceitfully. And the reminder is going to come, one day you will pay for those things that you have done. I think immediately there needs to be a reminder as we go through here of James chapter 3, and that's come up a number of times, as there is this warning over our tongue and how we use it. What great things that it can do, James 3 and verse 5. It is a little member, but it boasts great things, and it can kindle a great fire. It is like the rudder of a ship, that though it is so small, yet it can have a great influence, great impact on that ship, and so it is in our lives. And so how are we using our tongue? This ungodly has used it deceitfully. This ungodly has loved lies and has not loved the truth, and so he has chosen his path. That's the description of the one that is set before us. And so having seen, having glimpsed at that, here is a reaction to the enemy. And there's a reminder, God is going to break you down. God will tear you from your tent. He will pull you away from the place of your living so that others will say, look at him. Look at that man who would not make God his refuge. Look at that one who trusted in the abundance of his riches and sought refuge in his wealth. You who now are this mighty one, you who now lift yourself up, don't forget that one day you will stand before the throne of a mighty God. One day you will face the recompense of your actions, of your choices, of your deeds. And one day you're going to be torn down just as you have torn down others. You have torn down others with your mouth, with your tongue, with your words. But God is going to tear you down. He's even going to remove you from the place of the living. And why is all of that going to happen? Because you trusted not in God. You trusted in yourself. You trusted in your riches. You trusted in the things of this world, and those things are going to fail you. How many even still today want to trust in the so-called knowledge of science more than listening to God, who is the creator of all things? How many want to trust in the facts of what they consider the facts of what they see? Well, I've never seen God, so he must not be there. They want to trust in their riches and their possessions, and they will say things maybe such as, well, I've done just fine on my own, and fail to realize that God is the giver of every good and perfect blessing. God is the maker and the sustainer of even of our very lives. They may have misused and squandered and abused the opportunities and the riches that have been entrusted into their hands or that which they had gained in this life, but doesn't mean they're not going to one day give an account of those things. And so we're reminded in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10 that one day we will all stand before the judgment seat of Christ to receive the things that we have done in our body according to that we have done, whether it be good or bad. You see, we're going to answer for that which we've done good, and we're going to answer for that which we've done bad, and even those who reject the knowledge of God, as we will consider here in just another moment in Psalm 53, once again, even those who reject that knowledge of God are going to have to admit there is indeed a God. There is indeed a Creator. And so now they have to face Him and answer for the choices and the actions that they have done instead of having placed their confidence and their trust in Him. But by way of contrast, He comes back, and now the psalmist speaks of himself. And he says, unlike the wicked, unlike the one who considers himself a mighty man in the eyes of the world, I'm like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in God's steadfast love forever. I thank thee, God, forever, and I will proclaim thy name in the presence of the godly. What's the great difference that I hope we see time and time and time again through these psalms, as the psalmist is placing his confidence in God and he speaks of those who are not? Is it not a humility? That those who do not trust in God, those who do not place their confidence in Him, they place it in their own selves. They lift themselves up. They put themselves in a place that is not theirs and make themselves as unto God. And said, I don't have to listen to God. I don't have to answer to God. And so I'll do my own thing. I'll make my own choices and act as if there is no God and act as if even in that sense I am a God because I get to decide what is right and what is wrong. And so I take that position upon myself that was never mine. But contrast that to what we continually see in the Psalms as the psalmist will humble himself unto God. Oh yes, there's been times of rebellion and there's been times of repentance where he's have to come back and he will admit his sin, but even in that we see his humility because he will submit himself unto God and turn back to Him. Consider, if you will, the Beatitudes. We're familiar there with Jesus and His great Sermon on the Mount. And where does He begin? Here's this great multitude of people that are following Him, and no doubt they're waiting for some great words of wisdom. What is this one that they believe has come to liberate them? What is this one who they're hoping has come to be their king? What is He going to tell us about becoming great and once again regaining our national identity and regaining our nation and having Jerusalem great once again? What is this man going to utter forth? What are the great truths that we're about to hear? And so they listen as he sits down there on the top of this mountain and he begins to open his mouth. And I wonder the shock and the awe that was felt on that occasion. Instead of speaking of one and how they become great, Jesus begins to speak in Matthew 5 and verse 3. And he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. We didn't come to hear you talk about the poor in spirit. We came to hear you tell us how we're going to be great once again. We came to hear you tell us how to be exalted once again and to grow in strength once again. Yes. I've come to tell you how to be a member of the greatest kingdom upon the face of the earth, but it's not the physical kingdom that you're expecting. And to be great in this kingdom, you're going to humble yourself. And so blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. I would propose and suggest to you that's not the message they expected to hear on that occasion. That's not the truths that they thought were going to come forth out of the mouth of Jesus. And yet that's what they heard on this occasion. And it's all about humbling themselves under the mighty hand of God, to be poor in spirit, to recognize your needs, to be those who would mourn. And again, I would suggest to you there, verse 4 is not just simply those who mourn in the sense that we lose those that we love and we go through difficulties of life, but those who mourn their sin, those who will come and say, I have sinned, I have fallen short, and I am coming back to God. Blessed are those who are meek, verse 5, those who are going to take their power and their strength and going to place it under the mighty hand of God and saying, I am yours. I am your servant. Guide me, direct me, lead me. And so verse 6, I'm going to hunger and I'm going to thirst after righteousness. I want to know what's right, not in my eyes, not in the eyes of the world. I want to know what's right in the sight of God. And when I know that, I'm going to be a merciful person, verse 7. I'm going to be one who seeks and pursues after peace, verse 8. I'm going to be one who is pure in heart, verse 8, to strive to do that which is right and good. I'm going to be that one who pursues after peace, verse 9. I'm going to be the one who does so even at my own harm, even if it means I'm persecuted for righteousness' sake, verse 10. It's all about humility. And so even today in the Christian system, in the New Testament, under the covenant in which we live, is it not that same contrast? Who's going to humble themselves to God? Who's going to exalt themselves against God? That's the contrast that I see here in Psalm 52. You have the mighty man who has lifted himself up, who has exalted himself, who's trusted in himself, who will tear others down with his tongue, who will trust in his riches and his power and his strength instead of humbling himself unto God. But even in the face of that, the psalmist says, I know your end. I know you will come to nothing because you cannot stand before God. He will call you into account for the things that you have done. And so as for me, I want to be in the Lord's house. As for me, I want to humble myself unto God. I want to do His will. I want to be found faithful in Him. That's where we would find the psalmist. And so there is this contrast, but also this resolve, regardless of what happens, here will I remain. This is where I want to be. I think again of the 23rd Psalm, that idea, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. You may have a show of being blessed and having the things and the possessions of this life, but there's nothing greater than that I could want than that which I have from God. And so he shuns, he turns from that which is wicked and evil, and he's going to walk after, he's going to seek after the very things of God. Who are we going to be? I want to be not the ungodly that we see at the first of this psalm. I want to be that godly man we see at the end of this psalm. I want to make God my strength. And so there's a warning in there. Be careful to love the truth, to obey the truth, to speak forth the truth. You see, those who were wicked at the beginning, they didn't speak truth. They spoke lies to their own benefit, but in the end it was to their own harm and to their own destruction. And so will I utter forth that speech that is always with grace and seasoned with salt, Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, that speech that is going to strengthen and comfort, that's going to instruct and to edify, and that even when there is a sense in which we have to tear someone down by pointing out the sin of their life as we study the Word of God, that it's with the goal, it's with the aim of ultimately removing that sin from them from themselves by being obedient to the gospel, but then being lifted up, being built up in Christ Jesus. And so what will I use my words for, knowing that one day I will give an answer to them? And then also the idea here, I want to be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might, Ephesians 6 and verse 10. Men trust in a lot of different things, but those things will fail them. When God comes against them, and so I want to be the one who says, I want to be on the Lord's side. I want to be a part of the Lord's army. And so I will place my strength in Him. As we shift gears then, and we'll move along into the 53rd Psalm, we're going to find a very striking resemblance. Just a few words are different here between Psalm 53, and it ought to remind us, just a few weeks ago we were looking at Psalm 14. And here we're going to find very similar words, almost a repetition of that psalm. And so it reads thus: The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Corrupt are they, and have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good. God looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and that did seek God. Every one of them is gone back. They are altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Have the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread? They have not called upon God. There were they in great fear, where no fear was. For God had scattered the bones of him that encampeth against thee. Thou hast put them to shame, because God hath despised them. Oh, that the salvation of Israel will come out of Zion. When God bringeth back the captivity of his people, Jacob shall rejoice, and Israel shall be glad. And so once again, we have before us this, it's a psalm of wickedness. He's describing a nation that is turning against God, that is going away from him. This psalm, we'll come back to this in a few moments, but it's going to be referenced back to, even in the New Testament, to look and make a comparison that even those who would claim to be the people of God are those who at time have pursued after wickedness, have left off truly following God, and have gone their own way. And that's what we see before us, a wickedness even of those who might want to be called the people of God. And so first we have a condition here in verse 1. The psalmist is describing this wicked people. They are fools, even sometimes denying the very existence of God. It is the fool who has said in his heart, there is no God. This is the fool that has rejected knowledge and wisdom. This is the fool that has rejected all of the evidence that surrounds him, and he refuses to listen to it, and so has cast off and forgotten, if you will, the knowledge of God, and so shown himself to be foolish. He says, as they have forgotten God, they have become corrupt, and they do abominable iniquity, such that not a one does good. When man leaves off following God, he's going to turn from that which is right, because he has lost his standard of what is right. I think we see that in our society all around us. We live in a confused time where we have those that are on one hand are calling out that we need more acceptance of what was one time called deviant lifestyles, and then don't understand why we have the problems that plague our societies. We can't have it both ways. We're either going to be a nation that is pursuing after godliness or a nation that is drifting away from godliness. And friends, I would say we are doing more than drifting. We are running away from godliness as a whole in our society, because we are running away from that which might be known of God. Oh, I understand the arguments that there are those who will say, but you can have good people without the knowledge of God. There are people that do good, but can there really be good people? Because what is the standard of that goodness? They do what seems right unto themselves. They set themselves up as a standard, therefore as a God. They will decide what's right and what's wrong. And so when society begins changing around them, they must decide once again, well, what is right, what is wrong? And will find themselves adrift, awash in this mire, trying to decide, well, what really is right? How far can we go to allow one group of people their so-called rights when those begin infringing upon another's? And we lose all sense of standard. We lose a sense of morality. Well, such it is here with the people that have said there is no God. They have lost their standard. They have lost their way. Because here we have God as an upright, as a righteous, as a holy standard. And so we need to submit ourselves unto His will. And when we fail to do that, we leave it up to ourselves to decide between right and wrong. And so there is not a one that does good. Well, what is the cause? He says God had looked down, verse 2, from heaven to see if there were any who were wise, if there were any who seek after God. We speak of these fools who have denied the very existence of God. We speak of those who have grown corrupt. We speak of their iniquity. We speak of their not doing good. And here's God. He's looking. He says, is there any that are wise? Is there any who are still seeking after God? Or have they turned? Have they drifted away from me? Here we see the consequences, verse 3 and 4. They have all fallen away. They are depraved. Not a one does good. They have no understanding. They have become self-destructive. Again, make a note there. Look over at Romans chapter 1. A people that forget God and a people that begin to be unthankful for that which God has done for them are going to leave off the knowledge of God, and God will leave them off. Allow them to go after their own ways of iniquity, to pursue that which seems good in their own sight, even though he knows it's not that which is best. And so they are depraved. There's not a one that does good. They have no understanding. They're self-destructive. They do not call upon God. They have left off seeking after Him. And so there is a condemnation, verse 5. They are in terror. Why? They're in a fear when there need not be fear. Why is it that man would tremble after God when he doesn't have to? And I mean that in this sense. There should be a godly fear and a respect that would drive us to the throne of God to worship and honor Him and to do His will. But as we do so, we see a loving and a caring and a forgiving God who is willing to wipe away those sins. And so that love that we have would drive out that terror type of fear. Yes, there's still a fear there in a godly respect, but I don't have to fear standing before Him one day in judgment. We can be as Paul in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 8. I'm ready. As he looks towards the end of his life. But the one who has forgotten God stands in terror. Because while he could be at peace with God, he is not. And God will punish the ungodly. God will put them to shame. And they will be rejected. That's going to ultimately be the consequence of their turning and choosing not to follow after God. And so he ends with a call in verse 6. He prays that deliverance for Israel will come out of Zion. He speaks of the restoration of the fortunes of God's people, and he speaks of joy and gladness for Jacob and Israel. Again, a foreshadowing of the time of the Christ that is to come. Where is hope? What is that that's going to draw us back? What is that that ultimately is going to give us the confidence and the hope of an eternal home with God in heaven, but in Jesus Christ? That sacrifice that finally would be able to wash away sin. Though the Old Testament made provisions for rolling forward that sin, but it was the perfect, sinless sacrifice of Christ that provided an answer for sin. And so, oh, that day would come. And so he sees the great wickedness of this people, but he looks forward to the hope and the deliverance that God's people can have in Jesus Christ. And so we see this great rejection of God and the consequences of those that would turn from Him. Again, link Psalm 53 and Psalm 14 that are here very similar psalms, teaching us very similar things, very similar language there. Again, just a few words that are different between those psalms. A few lessons here that might be noted from the psalm. Number one is when our attitude about God is wrong, our conduct is going to be wrong. When we consider only the love and the mercy of God, and we fail to consider His righteousness and holiness and justice, our actions are going to be off. When we consider only the holiness and righteousness and justice of God and we forget His love and His mercy and His grace, our actions are going to be off. And when we would forget God altogether and say that He is a fairy tale made up in the eyes of men and He really doesn't exist, well, guess what? Our actions are going to be off. It's only when we have a right mindset about God, it's when we turn to the pages of His Word and learn of Him, then our actions and our conduct will be right. Where does that begin? The very opposite of where this psalm begins. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Proverbs 1 and verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I'm going to have again, that proper respect of who God is, both in His existence and in his nature, his character. And then I'm going to be driven to learn more about him, to hunger and thirst after righteousness, and to put him first in the kingdom of heaven. And then also, I would refer you to Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3, Paul is going to quote from this psalm. That idea here, it was written about God's Old Testament people. One thing he's going to show us is, yes, the Psalms were a part of that Old Testament law, because he's going to refer back to them here by inspiration. He gives credit to them. But he's also showing us this isn't just the ungodly in the sense that those who have totally cast off God. But this can be even the one who makes lip service toward God, the one who claims to be his people but do not live as they ought to live. They could have the Old Testament oracles right before them and yet not walk according to them. You want to reject the Gentile people as a whole because you considered them worthless and having rejected God, chapter 1, but he goes back in Romans 2 and Romans 3 and he shows, but you as a Jewish people who had the very oracles of God didn't use them, didn't benefit from them because they didn't draw you closer to him. And so his great conclusion, Romans 3 and verse 23, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Yes, even those who had the very words of God. And so it ought to remind us to be careful in how we treat God and how we treat his word. And are we truly seeking after him? And so a great lesson even there again in Psalm 50. Three. But then once again, God is set against there in 52 and 53. There's that idea, God is set against the wicked, he is for his people, and that's what the 54th Psalm is going to bring us back to again. God is a helper to those in trouble and those who would submit themselves unto him. So Psalm 54, save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear unto the words of my mouth. For strangers are risen up against me, and oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. He shall reward evil unto mine enemies. Cut them off in thy truth. I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good. For he hath delivered me out of all trouble, and mine eye has seen his desire upon mine enemies. Here again, the one who is oppressed, but the one who places his confidence in God is going to be rewarded. The psalmist here in verse 1 and 2 prays unto God fervently, save me, vindicate me, help me, hear me. God, listen to my words. Where is it that we are going to turn in times of trouble? Are we going to turn to a bank account? Are we going to turn to family and friends? Are we going to turn to our jobs, our fame? What is it in life? Is it our health, our security? Is it our security in terms of even our homes? Where are we going to find strength? Is it not in turning to God? The psalmist knew who to go to. The psalmist knew even when others would forsake him, God would not. And so he was ready to go unto God, and he cried out, he called unto God. Well, why? Verse 3, because insolent men have risen against me, ruthless men seek my life, and these are they who care not for God. They have not set God before them. They don't care what God thinks. Again, you take a man who does not believe in God and does not believe in eternal consequences, I'm going to laugh at, I'm going to scoff, and I'm going to abuse the one who does. Without fear of consequence, without fear of reprisal, and these are those who have risen themselves up against the godly man. And so this is why I'm calling out, and yet I have an assurance, verse 4 and 5. My assurance is that God is my helper. God is the one who upholds my life. God is the one who will deal with my enemies. I know that when wicked men rise against righteous men, they are rising against God. And God is going to be for his people and against those who are against him. And so my trust and my confidence is going to be in God. He will prevail, they will not. Even though at times they may prevail for a season, they may seem to conquer, nevertheless, God is in control. And so there is his assurance. And with that assurance comes a promise. And that promise, verse 6 and 7, I will sacrifice unto thee a free will offering. I will give thanks to thy name, for it is good. Thou hast delivered me from trouble, and mine eye has seen the victory given. There's a confidence here. God is going to do that which is right. God is going to be there for his people, and so I will freely worship him. It's not out of a compulsion in the sense that, well, this is something I guess I've got to go do. No, the psalmist is ready. I want to. I'm freely going to go and worship God, and I'm going to praise you and thank you for all that you have done because of your great name and because of the things that you have done for me in my life, and I have seen it. Again, one of the things that time and again impresses me about the psalmist is it's not just a book knowledge that he has of God. But there is this knowledge that says, God, I know that you have been with me, and therefore I have a confidence that you are going to continue to be with me based on what I've seen in the past. I'm going to praise you because I have seen the victory that you have given unto us. You know, it shouldn't surprise us when we face oppression, when we face persecution. After all, Paul told Timothy about how all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. They rejected Jesus. They're going to reject those who follow after Jesus. That shouldn't surprise us. When light shines in darkness, darkness doesn't like being reproved. Here the psalmist is trying to live an upright life, and there are those that are set against him. And so wicked men will rise against the righteous. But we have to remember, even when they do so, they are rising against God. And he calls upon us, 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, cast all your cares upon me, because he careth for you. And so there is that confidence. And so whether, again, things were going good or whether there was great oppression, he was going to turn unto God. And oh, how we wish the warning would go forth, even unto the wicked. When you set yourselves against that which is right, and when you set yourselves against God's people, you're setting yourself against God. and you're setting yourself up for a battle you cannot win. Because God will win, God will triumph, and God will be there for his people. Well, there were times when he allowed even the wicked to flourish. He set Nebuchadnezzar up as a conqueror over Jerusalem, made a great empire, but there were he would pull Nebuchadnezzar down too. He would lift up Babylon to do his will, but Babylon was going to pay for the things that they had done. There were going to be consequences to their sins and to their actions as well. And so that great nation that was lifted up to do God's will would fall. And even as times, maybe in our times, the wicked are allowed to flourish, it does not mean that they will go unpunished and that their sin will go unnoticed by God. And so the invitation and the call goes out unto all to turn and be faithful unto God, that our sins and our iniquities would be washed away and that we could walk with him in full trust and full confidence. That's the joy that the psalmist had. Friends, that's the same joy that you and I can have, that we can stand right in the sight of God and know that no matter what comes, I'm going to stand with God. And no matter what transpires in this life, when this life is over, then I will still be found standing with God, and I will be there for all of eternity. And so these psalms help me, and that reminder, if we'd stay in the psalms and continue to see these things, I'm going to have some difficult days, and I'm going to have problems, and I'm going to have troubles, but God is going to be right there with me through it all. If I don't move away from him, he won't move away from me. And that's the confidence we continue to see time and time again through these psalms. And so as we come there to the end of Psalm 54, we come to the end of our time together today. Certainly hope that you'll be with us, even Lord willing, tomorrow morning as Chip continues in our study of the Psalms, and that we will continue to benefit in these times of study. Want to continue to remind you, maybe you've missed some of these lessons. You can go back to tgrn.org, look for that on-demand section, and go back and listen to the last 3 months of episodes should be there. I'll be working here very soon to make sure that this whole year's study is preserved online. You can still go back even to last year and listen to our New Testament study, and it is up online. And so certainly take benefit of that, and hope that you look for those, as well as take a look at the schedule. And make sure that you are taking every opportunity you can to benefit from the work that many do here to make the Gospel Radio Network beneficial in your life as together we study through the pages of God's Word. And so as we sign off this morning, we certainly hope that you have a great day, and we'll keep listening right here on the Gospel Radio Network.